And we're back here with Just Transitions, Labor, Environment, and Health here on the Union Edge, Labor's Talk Radio. Nathan Ruggles here with you. I'd like to recognize a couple of the organizations that provide support for our programming here. That includes the Apple Tree Media Works as well as the Teamsters. And keeping us on the air here with the Union Edge. Now, we have our host here as well with Just Transitions, of course, in the studio, Patty DeMarco.
Hello, Nathan, and I'm glad to have with me Danielle Lewis from the Falk School for Sustainability at Chatham University. Danielle, welcome to our show.
It's nice to be here.
Now, Danielle, before the break, you talked a bit about the significance of nitrogen in the soil and the idea that if farmers don't give their soil a break, that's involved in that too, and the negative consequences that can have. So could you explain what that means in terms of what that means to give the soil a break and what and the role nitrogen plays in that?
Okay, so farmers, in order to have the best quality of soil, usually either rotate their crops or leave their fields go fallow for a year. So usually, like, corn farmers will plant alfalfa for a year. And what happens there is corn is a very nutrient-sucking crop, so it takes away all the nitrogen. Alfalfa will actually add that back to the soil. So in a healthy agricultural cycle, you'll have years where you rotate these crops in and out.
But in situations where you have to add artificially nitrogen to the soils, where you get these issues of this runoff. Is that correct?
Yes, that is.
That instead of doing normal crop rotation, like, you know, alfalfa, soy, wheat, corn, you know, you rotate in a variety of crops that have different nutrient requirements and some add nutrients back. You plant something year after year after year after year in the same place and add artificial nutrients through chemical, you know, fertilizers. And this doesn't nearly as well balance out the health of the soil over time. You get a much less organic soil. You get soil that's much more of a sandy substrate. It breaks down the living part of the soil.
And so also the plants that are grown in that soil are less nutritious over time.
Right, that's right. And a lot of the crops that are grown this way are really crops for animal feed.
Yes.
Right? So one of the really interesting things that I know has been emerging in this whole area of agricultural system reform is helping consumers understand their role in the land uses for agriculture by reducing the amount of meat dependence, especially beef, right?
Yes.
Beef. So give us some of the data about how much water and resources you need for growing a pound of beef compared to a pound of beans or corn.
Okay. Well, for beef, I have here from the USGS that 1/4 of a pound of beef, you need 460 gallons of water, where for a crop like lettuce, it takes 15 gallons of water. So you can see there that beef is a much more intensive crop. Well, if you think of it in those terms, what you get is you have to grow a lot of feed for these animals, and then these animals come down the chain. So by the time you raise a cow to actually go to slaughter, there's so much water and feed that goes into this animal, where if you're eating more of a plant-based diet, not as much water has to go into growing vegetables.
Yeah, and other resources as well, energy and nutrients as well.
And the issue of, too, of the use of that land for, say, feed corn as opposed to other uses for food, correct?
Yes, definitely.
How does that play into the situation?
Well, when you look at that on a global scale, we are actually using up a lot of our arid land or a lot of our land that could be used for agriculture for animals, where we should probably be using it to feed people. You know, we have world hunger in other countries, but yet...
Even in our country.
Yeah, and in our own country. But yet we're still feeding animals instead of ourselves.
So I think one of the interesting evolutions of sustainability as a concept in terms of food systems includes consumer eating patterns. I know our family has had the attempt to go completely vegetarian. My daughter and her children are vegan completely vegan. Okay. And they have been that way for years and years, and they're doing fine. Mm-hmm. And I struggle with some of my colleagues to have meat once a week and have that be a good thing. Mm-hmm. And it's not difficult to go vegetarian. There's such a wide variety of vegetables and ways of preparing things that don't require meat as a base.
Yeah, and as consumers, we really do have the choice.
Yeah.
If we go into the grocery store and pick to go organic or to pick locally raised meat, yeah, even, just making a few small changes like that, mm-hmm, actually makes a huge impact. Mm-hmm. I read on the USGS website that if only half of the U.S. population went vegetarian, that would cut our emissions in half for agricultural productions.
Wow.
So these small changes do really make a big difference.
And when you say emissions, like what all is that?
That would be CO2 and methane is a big one for beef production. Mm-hmm. Of course, on these feedlots, you have cows in close quarters, and you also have them, the manure and things that they give off. This causes methane to go into the atmosphere, yes, and that actually, methane is stronger than CO2. It actually speeds up the climate change even faster.
Yeah. Now, we have some really important experts in this field. Francis LaPay is coming to Pittsburgh to talk about this. Is that right?
Yes. Yes. The Eaton Hall Fellows have actually put together a conference. And Frances Moore LaPay, she is the author of Diet for a Small Planet, which talks about how some changes to our diet and going more vegetarian can make a big difference on climate change overall. We also have Julie Guthman. And we are going to have panels on renewable energies and also community engagement for changing climate change.
Mm-hmm. So it's really important for people to know that there are not earth-shaking changes that can make a big difference. And I think when you try to, you know, engage people in practices, understand that the climate is really an important part of what we leave to the as a legacy to your generation. Yes. And we need to cooperate as much as possible in having a viable planet for the next generation to live on, so that my grandchildren and their grandchildren will have a, you know, viable planet, mm-hmm, that will support life at least as robustly as we have now, if not better later. But that isn't going to happen if we continue on the path of destruction that we are on right now. So I think people underestimate sometimes the impact that our food system can have, and we're making even small changes can make a big difference,
yes,
in the outcome of this whole process.
Mm-hmm. For our climate change conference, yeah, we're going to be covering a lot of those same topics. Mm-hmm. Most of the time when people think climate change, they think of automobiles or, yeah, maybe industry. But our food system has a huge role to play, mm-hmm, in our CO2 emissions and methane emissions that are also contributing to climate change.
Mm-hmm. And how can people find out more about that conference and, you know, sign
it up is
for it?
Listed on our Eventbrite website, and that website is tinyurl.com/food and climate change. Also, that event is going on this Saturday, uh-huh, at the Eaton Hall campus at Chatham University. That's out in Gibsonia.
Yeah.
And that starts at 9 o'clock and it goes until 4 o'clock. We are asking that everyone register through the Eventbrite website, because there will be a climate lunch that's actually all locally grown and vegetarian.
Right, and it's grown at the campus, right?
Yes, it is.
So there is a practice what you preach component of this system up there at the Eaton Hall campus of Chatham University, and I'm really delighted that you have a chance to share this with us, and I wish you the best of success in your studies and in your continued efforts.
Okay, thank you.
Well, and Danielle, well, I think we'll look forward to hearing more about your research as you move forward, and we'll have to bring you back when you have more to tell about the work that you're doing.
Oh, I'd love to.
Yeah, good.
Well, very good. Well, thank you. Thank you, Danielle. And, of course, thank you, Patty DeMarco, for being here with us, as always, on Just Transitions, Labor, Environment, and Health. This is Nathan Ruggles here with you on the Union Edge Labor's Talk Radio.
It was 1973. Helen Reddy's song, I Am Woman, was at the top of the charts. The feminist movement was in full swing. A group of Boston women office workers started talking about how they were treated at work, how men made more money for the same jobs, how they couldn't take time off to care for their kids without putting their jobs at risk. They were feisty, empowered, and fed up. They founded 9to5, a membership organization of women working in low-wage jobs, inspiring a national hit song and movie. Whether it's fighting for better leave policies, for equal pay for equal work, to ban the box, or strengthen the safety net, 9to5 is on the front lines of putting our issues on the public agenda, and they're winning big. Find out more about how they're raising the bar at www.9to5.org. That's the number 9, T-O, number 5.org.
While college and university tuitions go up and up, higher education administrators have been spending less on students' education. Today, only a quarter of higher ed faculty has secure full-time jobs. The rest are so-called adjunct faculty, hired on a per-course temporary basis, often with no benefits, and are paid just $2,700 on average per course. Dedicated adjunct faculty across the country are joining together and fighting back in defense of their students' future. In Pittsburgh, they have formed the Adjunct Faculty Association, affiliated with United Steelworkers Union. Adjuncts and students all over the city are joining the AFA to achieve the goal of providing high-quality, affordable higher education. To know more or to support Pittsburgh's adjunct faculty, give us a call at 412-562-6967 or find us on the web at usw.org. Again, that's 412-562-6967 or usw.org. Together, we can take higher education back.
Most of my family, they never graduated high school, so I'm trying to break that barrier.
My daughter, Brooklyn, was also a motivation for me to go back to school. Every day after work, went straight to school, and it paid off.
At age 26, Kareem finished his high school diploma.
I could not have done it alone. I see the future is really bright for me.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Allison is perfect. I mean, she'd never tell you that. She's humble and perfect. She likes everyone. She even likes her untidy roommate's weird guinea pig. Allison, wait, are you texting and driving? Allison, no, that's the exact opposite of what I was just saying about you. Why, Allison, why? Texting and driving makes good people look bad. Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org, brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
I wasn't prepared to be a caregiver to Mom. I had no idea how hard it would be and what I would need to know. Things I never thought of, like how to improve her mood and ways for me to stay positive. Luckily, I found the Caregiving Resource Center from AARP. It had articles about the basics, but also information about the hurdles I was facing. Caregiving Resource Center at aarp.org/caregiving. Articles, tips, and tools to help you both care for your loved one and care for yourself. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
The International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 66, works with builders and contractors to build a better community. Local 66's tradesmen and women have received the specialty training needed to meet the complex challenges of any project, making them the most capable workforce in the region. From schools, highways, and pipeline projects to casinos and arenas, the operating engineers build any job, large or small. For over 100 years, Local 66 has provided superior service that our community can count on. They are your one-stop resource for qualified and productive operating engineers and heavy equipment mechanics. To learn more about the benefits of organized labor and more information about the International Union of Operating Engineers Local 66, go to www.iuoe66.org. That's www.iuoe66.org.
Hey everyone, let's all stop what we're doing and take a moment. You see? Every moment can be kind of special. But they can be loud moments, goofy moments, dorky moments, it doesn't matter. Because every time dads like us take a moment like that to spend with our kids, well, it's pretty momentous. So let's take a moment to make a moment. Call 877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
And we're back, and thank you so much for joining us here on the Union Edge Labor's Talk Radio. This is Nathan Ruggles sitting in here with you today. And we want to recognize a couple of our sponsors, the United Mine Workers, as well as the PSEA, two of the unions that support us here on the program. And you can support us as well. We're launching our own Patreon page here with the Union Edge. And if you go to patreon.com/theunionedge, you can get on there and see that you can not only contribute to a variety of levels, but there's also a variety of benefits. So we're going to be providing you with extended interviews. You'll have Charles's rants available to you, as well as just as a member and only as a member, as well as lots of goodies and swag we'll be sending out as well in the coming weeks. So we have here now on the line with us Alyssa Hansen of the Tennessee AFL-CIO. Alyssa, it's great to have you back on the program.
Hey, Nathan. Thank you for having me. I'm glad to be back.
All right. It's always great talking with you. So I know you've got some political news in the air down there and a variety of things down there in Tennessee, right?
Oh, yes, that's right. I believe the last time you and I spoke, we were just about 24 hours removed from Senator Bob Corker, who is our junior senator here in Tennessee, saying that he would not run for re-election in 2018, which was huge news and kind of shook up the whole political scene in our state.
That's right.
So in the 2 weeks since then, we have had all kinds of people coming out of the woodwork saying they're going to run. Congresswoman Marsha Blackburn, who is also from Tennessee and no friend of labor at all, has announced that she is going to run for his seat. So now we've got at least two people saying, on the Republican side, saying they'll be running for his seat. Governor Haslam, who is term limited, announced the same day that he will not run for Senator Corker's seat. A lot of people thought he was going to, but he will not be doing that. And then, of course, we've had a couple Democrats come out and say, you know, that they're running or they're thinking about running. So, needless to say, it's been a crazy busy 2 weeks politically, for sure. And that's just one seat. You know, we've had people come out of the woodwork saying they're going to run now for Marsha Blackburn's seats, and she's running for Senator Corker's seat. So we're trying to keep everything in order and, you know, see which candidates we can get behind in these races.
Yeah, every time someone comes forward and says they're going to run and potentially abandon their own seat, then you have people throwing their hat in the ring for those seats as well. So, but certainly, regardless of how it shakes out, it certainly does, I think, to the benefit of working families, and I imagine to a lot of the issues that you're working on, is it creates the opportunity for public conversation around so many of these issues that are important to working people.
Oh, that's absolutely right, Nathan. You know, this kind of brings up our central theme that we push a lot from our organization, and that's that, you know, we'll back any candidate who backs working families, whether you're a Republican or, you know, traditionally we back Democrats, or whether you're a Democrat. You know, regardless of political affiliation, if you support workers and support working people in our issues, then we can support you. So, you know, you brought up a good point with, you know, this really does kind of ignite that public conversation and get our members talking about the people who we can get behind for, you know, governor, congressional seats, Senate seats. We've got all kinds of races coming up next year that we want to have a part in. And, you know, we want to make sure that we get the right people elected to fill those seats.
And, you know, and two, when you have lots of candidates coming in, it really does give an opportunity to really get past just the rhetoric. I mean, we know there's lots of candidates out there, I would say, including our current president, who gives lip service to issues of concern to working families. But it really is about, you know, let's get beyond the sound bites, right? Let's get beyond just the rhetoric. Let's talk about real issues. Let's talk about real values and the things that are of concern to working families, and what are you proposing? What are you really going to do to support unions and working people? And in terms of those issues that are of concern, what is the top of the list for you down there in Tennessee that you're interested in hearing about from these candidates?
Well, I'd say one of our top issues by far is increasing the minimum wage. I know I've mentioned it before on the program. Tennessee's got one of the lowest, if not the lowest, minimum wage in the country. We sit at the federal level of $7.25, which obviously is the lowest the minimum wage can be. So that's one of our big issues, is making sure that all workers are paid a wage that can support them, that can support their families, and provide a decent income so that they're not looking at the end of the month between paying the rent and paying the electric bill. You know, we want to make sure that all workers are paid a living wage, especially in Tennessee. You know, our members are fortunate that they do make a living wage, but we want to see those wages go up, and we want to see the number of low-wage workers go down. So that's by far, that's our top issue for candidates. What can you do for working families, and how will you make sure that, we're paid a fair wage for a hard day's work?
And that's excellent, because whether it's a U.S. Senate candidate who is talking about, you know, the federal minimum wage and getting that thing up above $7.25 an hour, right, for states that are still at that level, such as Tennessee, or whether it's, you know, one of these candidates might run at a lower office there in Tennessee to get the state minimum wage something above that $7.25 an hour. Because, you know, we've had the campaign to fight for $15 an hour. You know, $7.25 is less than half. And certainly, you know, that's not where the minimum wage has been historically, right?
That's absolutely right. And again, you know, we're tired of seeing a level that low in Tennessee. We're ready to be at least $10, if not more. We'd love to see $15. We know that unfortunately in our state that's probably not going to happen, at least for a while. So we'll take any increase that we can get. And again, I want to go back to what you said about the sound bites and getting past the sound bites, because that's one of the things we're trying to emphasize with our members is that, you know, lip service during the campaign, that's always how it goes. But, you know, we need to focus on, what are you going to do once you get into office? How are you going to make life better for Tennesseans? And like you said, whether you're in Washington, in Congress, or whether you're here at the state, you know, what are you going to do to make lives better for all of us? That's what we want to hear. We don't need the lip service. You know, we want to hear what your actions are going to be, because, you know, at the end of the day, like I was told when I was a kid, actions speak louder than words. So that's what we want to see.
And we know from talking to you before, too, that the Tennessee AFL-CIO, it's not just about that election, but it's about, you know, the time between elections, holding whoever it is that gets elected accountable for what they've had to say, as well as pushing those issues that are not just concerned to union members, but to concern to all working families, right, in the state of Tennessee.
Oh, absolutely. And one of the things, going back, you had asked about the different issues that we'll be focusing on. One of the things, especially here in Middle Tennessee, is making sure that growth and development works for everyone. You know, Nashville's growing unbelievably quickly. There's jobs. We've got hundreds of people moving here a day. It's kind of crazy. But, you know, the thing we want to make sure is that Nashville's prosperity works for everybody, not just, you know, those in the big fancy skyscraper offices, but, you know, the men and women who are out there actually building these offices.
That's
and,
right.
You know, that's what we want to make sure is we want to focus on, you know, the prosperity that our city and really, you know, most of the state is seeing right now works for everyone.
That's right. The real wealth creators here in whether it's Tennessee or anywhere, the 99% that are out there doing the work and doing the jobs to build things and build the economy. Now, I understand one of the other concerns you have in terms of jobs is that there's been talk of in terms of rehab for those who may be suffering from drug abuse. Correct? That you know, we know that it's a big concern as far as addiction in this country and growing concerns about that. I understand it's a concern in Tennessee as well.
Yeah, that is. I mean, we have, of course, have our members assistance program here, which does a lot to help people who have, you know, drug and alcohol issues. But one of the newest things we've done that's actually pretty exciting, and our president, Billy Dykus, has kind of been the one spearheading it, is we have created, or more so forged, a new relationship with the 15th Judicial Drug Court here in Tennessee. And it's a relationship between the drug court, our office, and then the building trades. And what we've done, or, you know, what this new relationship hopes to do, rather, is to provide an opportunity for employment for nonviolent offenders with drug or alcohol addictions, because sometimes for a lot of these men and women, it can be difficult to get back out into the community and really feel that they can contribute in a way that's meaningful. So we hope that this relationship provides those people who may be struggling with drug and alcohol issues and have had run-ins with the law, you know, we hope that this can sort of provide them a pathway to employment and give them, you know, meaningful and fulfilling careers.
You know, that is, I'd say that's absolutely fantastic to hear about things like this. Some really positive news as far as the work that you're doing and others are doing. We're not just playing defense, right, against these too many attacks that we're seeing against working families and unions, but to hear about programs, not just giving people the treatment they need, but also looking at a job to get beyond that. Now, we're coming to the end of our time together here. Where can we find out about more about what you're doing down there in Tennessee with the FL-CIO?
There's three things you can do. You can find us on Facebook. You can check us out on Twitter, and our handle is at TNAFLCIO. And you can also check out our website, which I'm currently updating, and that address is www.tnaflcio.org.
Excellent. Great, great to know that people can find you in lots of different places there with the work you're doing. It's a pleasure talking with you, Alyssa. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Nathan.
And that was Alyssa Hansen with the Tennessee AFL-CIO. This is Nathan Ruggles, been with you here today on the Union Edge Labor's Talk Radio.